Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
Matter what time zone you're in, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat, getting you caught up on everything you might have missed. Headed into a fun Monday action. 800-224-2004. Call on the show. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. Let's be real. You love everything about this show. We know you love everything about this show, and we want to hear from you, the listener. So make sure you tune in. 800-224-2004. At Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, at SportsMap Radio. Download the Just Saying It podcast version of the show on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom, wherever else you get your podcast listening system. We got you covered 24/7, 365 days out of the year. And make sure you also download the SportsMap Radio app. Carry it in your pocket throughout your day so you don't miss a second of all of our great local programming. The wonderful, delightful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing fun 3 hours that just seem to always fly on by. There have been moves made throughout the NFL free agency, but one major move we called well back after the Super Bowl. It is coming to fruition. Why I believe that this team is on the rise. Let's also talk about one of the bigger upsets as Princeton is still dancing, proving that Cinderella did not have to end her ball at midnight. Instead, she's going to be playing on in the Sweet 16. And of course, we got to recap everything that we saw in the first weekend of the March Madness with one word recap. But we start off with the likes of a first round match, one that occurred Friday night as the luck of the Irish could only be dancing and proving their worth no matter where they were found as a 16 seed in Fairleigh Dickinson. FDU, believe it. See the likes of number one Purdue go down quietly. What an absolute dominant performance, no matter how you phrased it. Your bracket was busted right then and there. You had no shot of being able to say you were still 100%. And while you will not see the likes of FDU move on to the Sweet 16, the fact that they join a very historic, lonely, high pedestal that features only one other member in the fraternity of upsets of all upsets, a number 16 team taking down a number one. Well, that might have just been sweet enough to make your weekend that much more bountiful.
Eight seconds left. Smith drives, blocked from behind with 1.5 on the clock. The lob, and that will do it. Just the second time ever, a 16 beats a 1.
It feels awesome. It was an unbelievable night for us, and I didn't get much sleep. Obviously, no one got any sleep, but that's a great trade-off for a historic win and a great opportunity for our players and our school and our programs. I wanted to make sure we had a belief that we could win. You know, because we you know, a lot of times when you play a top seed, it's you know, you're the underdog. We're supposed to lose, so for us to go in there with a belief that we could win was great.
We got to box out. We got to rebound. We got to be tough. We got to be scrappy. We have to be that way tomorrow night.
So that was the likes of Tobin Anderson discussing not only a massive victory, but also the likes of what it took to be able to finally clinch that win. 800-224-2004. This is one of those times when you will look back on history and say, I remember when. Because you don't usually see these type of upsets. Naturally, you will have some Cinderella stories. You've always seen the 15 seed take on the number 2. There was a few years where you saw Florida Gulf Coast take down Georgetown. Last year, you had St. Peter's miraculous run all the way through the likes of the Elite Eight. It happens. These are things that occur in college basketball. And it's part of the reason why we love the sport in general. But a 16 seed, the last of the last, the final spot to be put into the conversation, that doesn't occur. Those games are utilized for warm-up matches, for test runs, for programs that feel like they have done enough throughout the regular season are rewarded by playing up against an opponent that certainly is just happy to be in the conversation, let alone even make the tournament in general. But every once in a blue moon, Magic somehow just takes over, and this was one of those times. Again, it's not as if you can go back and say, well, you know what? It certainly feels like Fairleigh Dickinson was able to prove its worth throughout its conference play. They didn't even win their own division. You guys have to remember this. Fairleigh Dickinson might end up being one of the more FD what the F type teams, because you sit here and say to yourself, how in the hell does this team make it in when they don't have anything going right for them? This was a program that benefited from having its other roster in the conference not be eligible to make it to the likes of the NCAA tournament. They could not make it in March Madness due to ramifications outside of their realm. So we're talking about not just a 16 seed. We're talking about a 16 seed that didn't clinch its division title, and because of a technicality, they snuck in as the last resort out there. So yes, the first four in or the last four out, however you want to phrase it, you can't even put that in the same subject with FDU. They're nowhere near conversationless even bound to happen. And instead, they make their mark under Tobin Anderson, who the weekend before, on a Tuesday night, screamed to the nation, told everybody in that building, I want Purdue to hear this. I want Purdue to know this. I think we can beat them. Yeah, not only did he not call his shot, he swung big and hit the grand slam of a lifetime. One that soon won't be forgotten and one that only joins the likes of one other school and UMBC back against Virginia in 2017. That is where we are with FDU Believe It this morning. This is where the Knights stand tall and they belong at that round table. They belong in the likes of the big circle. They belong to be able to say we did something that never occurred before. And on the flip side, let's go ahead and talk about Purdue, because if I told you all from the get-go Purdue was an overrated team, I did not believe for one second that they belonged as a number one seed, and it's not because of I don't think that Purdue can't win things, because they can. They have the right coach in Matt Painter. They had one of the biggest names in Zach Edey to be able to take on any person that he went up against, 7'4". Last year, they proved their worth with Jaden Ivey as the superstar, making it to the Sweet 16. But every season, this is what Purdue is. I know I say this about Virginia. I know Virginia is that roster that you go to yourself and say, really? This is who we're going up against? This is how we feel? Yeah, Purdue is in that same exact conversation. In fact, you could say probably 10 times over, they're even more so in that conversation. Mainly because look at the way they've played over the last decade and a half. We can just go back to this past year, now losing as one of two teams all time to be eliminated in the first round. How about last season, losing to St. Peter's as a 15 seed in the Sweet 16? How about 2 years before that, in 2021, 4 seed, overtime loss to 13 seed North Texas. 2 years after that, they find a way to lose to Texas Tech in the Sweet 16, a Tech team that was underneath new coaching, with a second-year guy in Chris Beard, who ended up walking into Minneapolis and nearly got the upset win over Virginia. How about 2 years before that in 2016 as a 5 seed? They were eliminated in overtime by Little Rock. How about the year before that? They were eliminated by Cincinnati in overtime. And 2 years before that in 2011, upset not only by the likes of, nearly lost to the likes of St. Peter's, but lost to VCU, a number 11 seed. You want to talk about fans going through hell? No, they've been at the gates of hell from the get-go underneath this franchise and underneath this program. That's what Purdue is. They're a desolate program that can't find a way to pick up the massive win in the right moments at the moments that matter most. And this year, when you feel like that you have everything going for you, you proved your worth in the Big Ten, you upset everybody and dominated the competition throughout conference play, you put yourself on a pedestal claiming that this was the year when you had physical notion down in the paint, but you also had a variety of seniors that were taking steps forward, the necessary moves to be able to build your franchise in the right direction, put yourself in a conversation amongst everyone else. You still find a way to end up now having the biggest upset of all time. And yes, I will say this is a bigger upset than UMCB than the likes of UMCB because of the ramifications. This is not a program that walked in and felt confident about itself. This was a program that, because of technical reasons, snuck its way into the mix. That's all it was. There was no more other than that. So you put that now on the page as well. How do you not feel even more confident for FDU? How? This is why I love March. This is absolutely why I do. Because of I love that we'll be able to see these underrated teams be able to make noise throughout the postseason. I love the fact that we are going to have a 16 seed play in the Sweet 16. I mean, a 15 seed play in the Sweet 16. I love the fact that there is an upset win with a team like FAU that absolutely got shafted a spot as the number 9 seed now playing in the Sweet 16. And I love that we still have dominant competition and very quality teams throughout the entire round of 32. But a 16 seed, finding a way to get the upset win, proving that not only it can go toe-to-toe with the big boys, showing on the brightest stage that this team, this roster, this program, yeah, we have the cojones to be able to stand tall and prove to everybody, don't count us out just because of we're the little team that could. No, you're the little team that is. That's what FDU did. They set the tone, they proved their worth, and once again, another small school program from the likes of New Jersey comes out of nowhere and makes sure the country doesn't forget who they are, where they're from, and where they're going. Absolutely, it could have been better if they would have made it to the round of Sweet 16. Absolutely would have been better. But still, I digress. Purdue, a team that I figured was going to lose in the round of 32, losing the round of 64 to a team in FDU? Yeah, you best believe it. This is why March Madness reigns supreme in college basketball.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Blake Peters has been making shots coming off the bench for us for weeks, and you got to have that going into the tournament. This is a very, very confident group. We are so thrilled to be going into Sweet 16. Princeton is a really, I don't think anybody does it quite like Princeton. I know I'm biased, but there's great school spirit, and the school does that. You know, it's a four-year institution. You have personal relationships with your professors, and all the student athletes know each other, and it really makes you feel comfortable.
That being the likes of Princeton head coach Mitch Henderson discussing not only a victory 78-63 over Missouri, but a shot to continue dancing as the Cinderella of 2023. 800-224-2004. You always like rooting for the underdogs, and you like rooting for the nerds. You want to know why? Because nerds make the world go round. Any single way that you view a nerd, they find it in their capacity to make life that much easier. Whether you be a nerd like me, obsessed with the MCU, loving the likes of pop culture references, enjoying all the tidbits that you see behind closed captions, or nerds that end up actually building up with repertoire and finding new chemicals to be able to make yourself happy, make yourself be able to be more sustainable, nerds that actually end up making documents and laws that put us into the checks and balances in life, or of course, those who are finding medicine that make us more complete and more substantially better for the longevity. Nerds make the world go round. And the Princeton Tigers are a perfect example of proving why nerds rock. Because if this is a team that has more chemistry, more consistency, and more domination than you would probably care to admit. Name the last time that you actually remember hearing about Princeton in a positive light outside of the fact that they were an Ivy League school in any single sport. You can't. But this is one of those times where it does feel like it is nothing short of just a good recollection, homegrown, feel-good story, absolutely swinging from the top rope. Because you want to know why? When you think about it, Princeton is one of these institutions that shows why March is awesome. You look at the way that they shot against Arizona, complete and total domination throughout the entire second half. I mean, this was an Arizona team that, without question, overpowered, overmatched, better recruits, more complete roster, more consistency, better level of competition. They've gone through the ringer. They've been there before. They know what it takes to go far in the postseason. And because they play against teams in the Pac-12 like USC, UCLA, and naturally countless others in Oregon State, Oregon, you can throw Cal into the mix, they should be more battle-tested. Not only were they completely outmatched in the second half by a lackluster Tigers team, but they shot even better than them. They were 42.1% from the field. They were 18.8% from behind the arc. At the free throw line, they were exactly the same at 57.1. They had the exact same amount of rebounds, same amount of assists, same amount of steals. What it all came down to was turnovers. One team had 13 turnovers, the other team had 11. And at the end of the day, the one with fewer turnovers walked away with a 59-55 win. But then Princeton against Missouri, another program that comes from the likes of battle-tested, battle-proven grounds of the SEC, eight programs representing the conference in the likes of the big tournament. They were a better team, top to bottom, every way you phrase it. Who was better at shooting? Princeton, 43.5. Who was better for the three-point line? Princeton, 36.4, 12 of 15 at the free throw line. Not to mention they out-rebounded them by 14 points. They had six more assists. They had eight total fewer turnovers. And they only had 9,000 in the game compared to Mizzou's 18. This is how you play. This is what it's all about. It's not about having the moment be too bright. It's about what you do when the moment is already blinding you in the face. And Princeton absolutely is not Purdue. Purdue had everything going for them. Best conference in college basketball. Check that. Number one player in the game this year. Check that. One of the best coaches in Matt Painter. Check that. An easy schedule. Check that. Princeton is playing from behind. They're a 15 seed. That means they have to go against a number 2, then a number 7. Next up, they'll be facing off against what? A number 3? Number 4? Number 5? It doesn't matter who they face off against. It just shows you that right now, this Princeton roster is fun, it's exciting, and it's innovative. The best part about this entire Princeton story and why I like this Cinderella feel is because if you got to know who Mitch Henderson is, this is not a known commodity or an outside name who doesn't get Princeton basketball. No, he was there in 1996. When David took on Goliath, it was one of the biggest games of the year. It was a three-seeding UCLA, and they were a 14 seed, Princeton. And they get the 43-41 victory. This is a Princeton roster that has not made the tournament in over a decade, and this is a Princeton roster that's last victory before their 2-0 run to make it to the Sweet 16 hadn't won a game since 1998. This is why it's so important. And on those teams, Mitch Henderson, the head coach. So he gets not only what it takes to win inside the tournament, but he also knows firsthand of what the tournament's all about, how opportunities can arise out of nowhere, and you have to make the most of your shots, have to make the most of your time on the court, and you have to just show that your determination and grit carries you further. Princeton's a fun team. Princeton's an absolute fun team, and I'm not sure if they're going to get another win. You know, I thought it was incredible that they got an upset over Arizona, a team that at one point looked to be not only one of the best teams in the Pac-12, but one of the best teams in college basketball. Now they got a game against Creighton, and if they beat Creighton, they'll face off against potentially Alabama or San Diego State. And it's an Alabama team that absolutely dominated the likes of Maryland in the round of 32. But if you go back and watch them against Texas A&M Corpus Christi, there were some moments of weakness. There were certainly some moments where you didn't feel that comfortable about what the Crimson Tide could do. And I'm not saying that you'll see domination of Alabama, Brandon Miller, Nate Oates being able to just fall apart in the second half like you did an Arizona team. But you will see, in my opinion, one of the more, not battle-tested, but certainly one of the more interesting matchups with the Tide taking on the Tigers. And I think that there's absolutely a reason to say, without question, things could go down to the haywire. Things could absolutely end up not factoring in your favor. It's an interesting game. They have a game coming up against Creighton. Creighton had a down-to-the-wire type matchup against the likes of Baylor. and they now may have the opportunity to truly set the tone. I'm very excited to see what Princeton brings to the table. I think that they're a good roster. I think that they're a fun story. I think that this is what college basketball is all about. You want to be able to root for the underdog. You want to be able to find that Cinderella story. And never tell Cinderella to go home at midnight, because Princeton's proven to you right now that they can go ahead and keep on dancing past the ball well into the mid-late hours of the evening. 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson, which is saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. So while Princeton is probably the best story right now in the NCAA tournament, besides FDU, if FDU would have won, that would have just completely changed the entire perspective of how we view the tournament. A 16 team in the Sweet 16, that's nothing short of just being impressive in itself. But what's the other team that I think y'all have to root for, that you have to say to yourself deep in your mind, this was a better roster than expected? Folks, I'll tell you right now, it was Arkansas. Arkansas was one of these programs that when you look on paper, you probably think of them as maybe a team that certainly has the defensive prowess. But part of the reason why Arkansas never found its proper footing was because they couldn't stay healthy. This was a team and an organization that had all the talent in the world, with Ricky Council, with Nick Smith, with Kelvin Johnson, with Andre Black. I mean, Anthony Black. They were loaded top to bottom. But the problem was that you never had the same four on the court at the same time. You never had a leader to be able to keep this ahead. You always had that one name who was missing a game or two. But then when you finally see them all play together, it absolutely is domination. It's not just consistent offensively, but it's great defensively as well. You had a guy you had three players in Devontae Davis, in Kelvin Johnson, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Nick Smith, all get more than 8 rebounds in the game. Not to mention, they also all average anywhere between 21 and 25 points. You don't usually see a Ricky Council go off for 25. You certainly don't see a Devontae Davis go off against a Kansas team that felt like on paper had one of the more complete rosters and certainly was doing its own pathway to make it back to the Final Four as repeat champions. You don't usually have that. But here we are looking this morning at a defensive showcase from Eric Musselman and a really inconsistent game from Kansas, who was missing their leading guy in Bill Self, who once again missed out in the tournament because of his health concerns. It only shows you that your record sometimes may lie to you if you don't have the right amount of games. And this is another thing that I think is really important. When you look at a team, how they play during the regular season may not entirely dictate what they can do in the postseason. You had Arkansas that was completely mismatched by teams like Texas A&M, Texas, Oklahoma, countless others, because of what happened was they just weren't healthy. Now fully healthy, they're geared up for a Sweet 16 run.
We've got your tournament coverage right here on the Sports Map Radio Network, presented by HelloFresh. This spring, HelloFresh is delivering great tasting recipes that help you stick to your food goals, like new dietitian win options that are under 700 calories. Go to HelloFresh.com/hoops60 and use promo code HOOPS60 to get 60% off plus free shipping. HelloFresh.com/hoops60 and use promo code HOOPS60. Now, back to the show.
One tournament matchup may not be enough for you to call it a Cinderella-type story, but it certainly was enough for us to have a good conversation about it. 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson, which is saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Each and every Monday at this time, we go and play our favorite game, One Word Recap. It's a very simple concept, people. We discuss subject matters that occur around the likes of sports, whatever it may be. We break it down and give you our own thoughts about it. Of course, naturally, there's nothing else to talk about but the round of 64 and the round of 32, as 16 teams still remain in the conversation for a shot at hoisting up the national title come later on next month right here at NRG Stadium in Houston, Texas. So why don't we waste any more time? Michael, let's go ahead and break down our one-word recaps from the first round of the NCAA tournament.
Houston versus Northern Kentucky.
I think it was either telling would be a good one or nail biter is another one. You got to remember, this was a Houston team that did not look like its normal self. And I know that Houston is slightly overrated in my opinion, but we still look at Houston as arguably one of the more complete teams in college basketball. Without Marcus Sasser, they certainly seemed like a team that was ready to be one foot out the door. And in fact, if not for Northern Kentucky struggling from behind the arc, they went 5 of 33 on three-point attempts. If they had any other team out there that was able to find any bit of balance and consistency when it came to behind the arc, they would have ended up being that number one seed that would have lost. And we would have had two teams probably as number one rosters end up getting upset in the round of 68. Instead, they find a way to win. They do put on a much more complete performances 2 days later against Auburn in the round of 32. They'll be playing now in the round of Sweet 16, hopefully with a more complete balance and healthy Marcus Sasser to carry the load to head back to Houston.
Furman versus Virginia.
Predictable. Again, this was the one upset that I told you from the get-go. Michael and I had an argument over it. It was rock, paper, scissors. I believed that Furman was going to get this upset win, and it wasn't because I thought that Furman was an incredible team. It's that I don't trust a team like Virginia. They sold their souls to the NCAA devil to win back in 2019, and ever since, they've been disappointing. This was a roster that found a way to be outboxed, outscored, outpredicted. One team was 33.7% from behind the arc. Another team was 16.7. They had more rebounds. They had a higher three throw percentage. And they were more physical in the paint. That's all it was. Furman, the Paladins, were absolutely going to dismantle the Cavaliers. And never forget, a Paladin wears armor. And the only thing that Virginia wears was their hearts on their sleeves as they were shown the door early in the NCAA tournament.
Arizona versus Princeton.
Homecoming. Again, this is a team that I feel like has a little bit more of like that ingrown feel, because you got to remember, this is no longer just a roster that you say, oh, you know, we're fine with. No, Mitch Henderson played on that 1996 team that had UCLA losing to Princeton. And Princeton has not won an NCAA matchup since 1998. So the coach who was a part of that team as a player is now commanding the shots, absolutely showing why he belongs, and they won on all three phases. Offensively, they were a more consistent team shooting. Defensively, they were more physical in the paint, and they were productive at the three throw line, which is ultimately could be the difference maker. The final line was that who had the fewer turnovers? It was Princeton, and Princeton now gets to move on to the Sweet 16. They'll have a matchup against Creighton. It may be the end of the run, but you know what? So far, it's been nothing short of impressive, and it is a homegrown feel.
Florida Atlantic versus Memphis.
Buzzer. Honestly, it's the only way to put it. Florida Atlantic is still dancing because they got a late second shot off in against the likes of the Tigers. I honestly did not think this was going to happen. I thought for sure that when you saw the likes of how this game was going to unfold, they were not going to be able to hold on. Instead, they get a nail-biting shot from the likes of, who was, if I'm not mistaken, DeAndre Williams with a tip-in with 2.5 seconds left to get the first win in Florida Atlantic history. Now, not only are they going on their first NCAA tournament run, they have an opportunity to potentially make it to the Elite Eight since the number one seed, Purdue, no longer is in there. FDU ended up actually winning on. So they end up now moving on to the Sweet 16 for a much easier pathway to potentially a shot at Houston.
TCU versus Arizona State.
Heart pounding. It was another one of these games when you look at on paper, you're saying to yourself, man, this is going to go down to the wire. And it did. 72-70 victory for the likes of the Horned Frogs. But it only happened because of you had Jacoby Coles turn off with 1.5 seconds left. He hit a floater that allowed them to take a late second lead, and now they improved on to the second round of the tournament. They ended up losing last night to Gonzaga, but still, this was an absolute nail-biting type, heart-pounding, however you want to phrase it. I know you can, you know what, I use hyphen, so it counts as one word to me. Heart-pounding type performance. You had in the last 2 minutes alone, seven different lead changes. That's how you know you're in a dogfight, when you have that many lead changes to go ahead and close out your night.
Pitt Pitt versus Iowa State.
Another one that I'm going to use with a hyphen, team-driven. I thought that Pitt was one of these programs that absolutely from the get-go proved that they belonged in the tournament, but they had to go ahead and have the play-in game against the likes of Mississippi State. Instead, they absolutely dominated. This was not a fun game if you were an Iowa State fan, because all you watched was Pitt basically have two guys really be the leading guys. You had, who was it? Jamarius Burton, he averaged 11 points. And then you had, I think, Nelly Cummings also finished with 15 points. But every single player was shooting roughly around 65%. Every single player added in value when it came to defense. Every single player was able to go ahead and make some noise. They shot as a team 34.1% from the field. They shot 86.2% from the free throw line. And they finished with 39 total rebounds. Iowa State had 21 total rebounds, and they only shot 9.5 from behind the arc. That was a team-driven win. Unfortunately for Pitt, the road stops here. They will not be advancing past Xavier, but they did impress, and I did have them in my round of 32, so congratulations for us to get that upset.
Duke versus Tennessee.
Stupid. Just stupid. There's no other way to put it. Duke should not have lost that game. And I don't think that Tennessee is that damn good. There was moments where you saw the Blue Devils actually kind of pull away. John Shiler's first time in the tournament as the head coach really proved to be dividends. But late game, you had a big turnover. You had a now 12-0 run from the likes of the Volunteers. They were able to advance. They're now in the Sweet 16. I just don't think it's that good of a team. Oliver Nkomo, who had a very big game. Orios Plasvik also had a really big game. One had 27 points. The other one had 18 points. They're not going to go ahead and play for a shot at the Elite Eight. I just thought it was a really stupid performance by not just Tennessee, because I don't think Tennessee is that good. I just thought Duke absolutely handed them a win after being 27-6 throughout the regular season.
Auburn versus Houston.
Comforting. I think this is where you feel better about Houston right now. Marcus Sasser came back. He got 25 points in the game. They also shot really well from behind the arc. I think if I'm not mistaken, they finished with, I think they were 31% from behind the arc. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken. They also shot 41.7% from the field. They out-rebounded Auburn. They had a better free throw percentage shot. They had 11 total assists. They had 12 blocks in this game. They were the more defensive enforcing team against a very defensive-driven roster. So I think you add that in, it makes you feel a lot more comfortable about where Houston's going versus where Houston was in the first round of the postseason.
Alabama versus Maryland.
Relaxing. I think if you're an Alabama fan, you feel a lot better about yourself this morning than you did against the likes of, Corpus Christi, Texas A&M Corpus Christi. You know, Brandon Miller did not have a good game to start off. He did have a much more complete game in round two. He finished with, if I'm not mistaken, what was it, 19 points in this one? Yeah, 19 points in this one. You had Jaquanius Quinley finish with 22. You also had Charles Badeko finished with 10 points. As a roster, they averaged 75% from the field. They also averaged 39% from the behind the arc. They were 75% from the free throw line, and they had 44 total rebounds. I call that a massive win, which ended up being, if I'm not mistaken, really physical game, but what was it? 22-point differential? Yeah, you win by 22 against a Big Ten team. I think that you can say you've done something right here.
Kansas versus Arkansas.
Turnovers. That's really what this came down to. Kansas was a team that I thought could easily make a deep run in the postseason, but you have to remember that at the same time, they did not have the rebounds, and they did not have the turnovers. Total turnovers, 12 for Kansas, 11 for Arkansas. Both teams really struggled at the free throw line. Both teams really struggled behind the arc. But I thought that what ultimately came into fruition was especially late in the game. I'm talking with less than, I think it was 35 seconds left. You had three turnovers from the likes of Kansas. That alone made this a must-see spectacle for Arkansas, who moves on to the Sweet 16 for a third straight year.
And Michigan State versus Marquette.
Bustin'. That's where my bracket decided to go ahead and go haywire. Thanks, Marquette.
Taking you through the brackets on the Sports Map Radio Network, presented by BlueChew.com. Guys, it's all about confidence. And confidence is what you get with the chewables from BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form at a fraction of the cost. And for Sports Map Radio listeners, try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code MADNESS at checkout. That's BlueChew.com, promo code MADNESS, to receive your first month free. Now, back to the show.
Cinderella keeps on dancing past midnight in college hoops, but could it actually transpire in any other sport? 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson, just saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. So my favorite thing that I hear from people, especially during this time, is how the Cinderella story, the number 15 seed, 14 seed, whoever it will be, ends up actually taking a step back rather than a step forward in terms of what you have with the roster. And what I mean by this is that you look at how they dominated, especially in the first half of a game, and you think that they're going to be able to make this a current constant. It doesn't happen that way. So let me just go ahead and preface this. What happens in college basketball is certainly one of its own. And I think that it's good that you have this as one of your own. But at the same time, you also have to realize that part of the reason what makes college basketball so special is that this is the only sport that this can occur in. You don't see this happen in the MLB. You don't see this happen in the NFL. And you don't see it happen in the NBA. But the real storyline comes to is college football. Everyone wants to go ahead and pinpoint college football as the next up-and-coming sport where the Cinderella story can occur. Now, why won't this happen in major league sports, such as NFL or the MLB? Well, for starters, you pay for your players. It doesn't matter if you are the worst team in the MLB as a Cincinnati Reds or Pittsburgh Pirates. You have a multi-billion dollar owner that's able to go ahead and utilize his money and the likes of good positioning with the franchise to be able to bring in as much talent as possible. Where in college hoops, literally, you can only get as much as possible. You can only get as much as your team allows you to have. So a team like Princeton is not going to be able to go out and afford a Brandon Miller, not just because of GPA perspective, but also because of it's Princeton versus it's Alabama. Alabama is a multi-billion dollar corporation that absolutely is able to bring in whoever they want, regardless of the sport. And Princeton has to also worry about the GPA perspective. So that's part of the reason why that doesn't occur and why it will in Major League. The other reason is that in Major League, every player is nearly at the same capacity. Whether or not you are part of a team that features only certain prospects or a team that has a multitude of all-stars, whether that be on the court, or that be on the ice, whether that be in the NFL, you're playing a professional sport. You've made it past the round of, amateur level, to where everyone may not be on the same playing capacity, but everybody that's in the NFL or everyone that's in the MLB, they certainly belong there. They've proven it through the minor leagues. They've proven it through what they've done on film productivity, on scouting, that they absolutely belong in that ranks. You don't know if that can be the same case for the likes of college hoops. St. Peter's last year was ultimately one of the best stories that you're ever going to have, and it ended up leading to the hiring of Shamir Moore to the likes of Seton Hall. But you didn't think of St. Peter's on the same level as Alabama. And you don't think of St. Peter's on the same level as Purdue or Kentucky or countless others, which makes it that much more impressive in the likes of college hoops when they get that victory. And they did. St. Peter's got two massive wins, one over the Wildcats and one over the Boilermakers to make it to the Elite Eight. That's a huge plus. And it makes it that much more special. You won't see that in regular sports because everyone should be nearly at the same playing capacity, even if they aren't really at the same level of play, if that makes any bit of sense. But why won't this happen in college football? And that's a big one here, because college football is getting expansion. We're going to move to 12 teams. So now we have 12 teams, which means that 12 seed can end up spoiling a number one seed. Well, hate to break it to you folks, you don't know who that number 12 seed is. And the problem is that you aren't looking at teams that you would see in college basketball. When we say a 15 seed is a massive upset, we talk about Princeton. When we say FDU gets that big win over Purdue, you don't know where FDU is. You don't know where these programs hail from or what their overall roster makeup is. St. Peter's last year was the great story because the Peacocks flew out of nowhere. Peacocks don't fly. Everyone knows that, right, Terry? But you look at on paper, they are a team that made sense because of their 15 school. They have a population of under 4,000. Furman has an undergraduate program of less than 4,000 students. That, to me, is an underdog Cinderella-type story. You know who's going to be potentially the 12 seed when we talk about college football? An Oregon, a Washington, a Purdue, a Maryland, a Penn State, a Michigan State. You know, a team that had all the recruits, that still is one of the massive institutions in college football. And the only reason why that they didn't go ahead and get a higher seeding was because they lost games earlier in the year. They finished 9-3 versus finishing 11-1, and because if they play in a rigorous Big Ten West schedule, or whatever you may call it, Pac-12, SEC, they end up benefiting from playing in a major conference, and they go 9-3, but they find their way to rebound at the very last second. Those are the Cinderella teams that we're talking about in college football. You're not seeing a lot of Texas State, which, by the way, still has a population of over 22,000 students. You aren't seeing a St. Peter's come through because they don't have a football program. You aren't seeing a Princeton be able to make noise because to win, not only would they have to dominate in the Ivy League, they would also have to prove they were the most complete team among Group of Five level schools. So I'm sorry to say that the reason why it won't work in college football and it will work in college hoops is because, number one, 64 teams, really 68 teams, have an opportunity to win. And there's more competition in terms of college basketball because you don't really worry about FCS, FBS, I mean FDS, yeah, FBS, Division II, Division III. You just worry about who you play. And so there's more level of competition for teams like Winthrop and Green Bay and UCMSB and Coastal Carolina and South Central to be able to make it to these tournaments because of all it is just a team getting into the tournament. It's not that way in college football. You have over 131 programs, but of those 131, you're probably really only looking at, I don't know how many, maybe about two dozen that truly end up actually qualifying for the college football playoff. And 9 times out of 10, even though you have those group of five schools, we're talking about a group of five schools that are still very well put together. They have great programs. They have a level of consistency to where they kind of prove that they belong in the likes of college hoops. So that's, college football. So to me, that's part of the reason why I consider it a huge win, is because if you're watching these teams be able to show the level of consistency. Perfect example. If the college football playoff were to occur 2 years ago, nobody would be batting an eye that Cincinnati did not belong in the CFP because they were number four seed already in a conference where they had to go up against the best. But that season as well, I think the other thing you could take away is that 2 years before that, they proved their worth against Georgia in the Peach Bowl. Nobody was going to doubt that Cincinnati belonged as one of the 12 schools. Whether you consider that they were a four seed is bygones be bygones. We can have conversations about that on a rainy day. But the fact is that they proved during that span they can work and that they belonged and that they would be able to hold their own in terms of being a 12 seed. Well, even when you have those teams like, say, a Coastal Carolina, or you have that with a Appalachian State, they're probably going to show you over the course of 2 or 3 years what stability looks like. There'll be a veteran roster whenever they make it to the actual big dance. There'll be a team that has proven twice or 3 years in a row that 10-3, 11-1, 12-0 is consistent. And even then, they still are probably going to be eliminated in the first round as an 11 seed against a 2 seed. Like, that's what we're talking about. Oh, I might also add in that these teams that you see, you have to remember, there's a bye for the top four rosters. So the first four teams don't even have to play round one. And why does that matter? Well, because when you put it down on paper, the big deal is that you're not going to see many 11-seeded rosters be able to not just stay fully healthy, number one, but less fatigued to where they can go a full 17-game season. And yes, it will be 17 games to where if you are not one of those four seeds, you basically are playing until you're out of breath. So it ends up actually benefiting you if you are one of the top four seeds. And unless you literally are a undefeated roster 3 straight years in a row, you are going to be a group of five level school that's playing round one. You won't be that if you're an Alabama or an Ohio State or a USC, but you will if you're an App State or if you are a Tulane or if you are one of these other schools. It's a great storyline for sure, and I think that absolutely we are for college football expansion. Yours truly loves the fact that we have college football expansion. But to say that we're actually going to end up one day seeing these Cinderella stories happen on the college football playoff fields, give me a break.